All right, guys, welcome back. Earn Your Leisure, ATL edition. Yeah. We got a very, very special guest, special episode. It's crazy because we've covered real estate a lot, but we covered it from wholesaling, from development, from investing, but we haven't covered it from a realtor's perspective.
Yeah.
So we have Kiana Watson, who is one of the top realtors in Atlanta, top 5% realtor.
Top five.
Top five for sure. And she has her own firm too.
Yeah.
Kiana Watson Associates. And I thought that was really dope to highlight somebody that not only has performed at an extremely high level in the business, but is a business owner as well. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation because we're going to talk about it from the realtor's perspective and also from the business owner's perspective and get a different spin on real estate than we've gotten in the past.
We got the right person, man. We got the right person.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about my perspective and let you guys know what it's like to be a realtor in the metro Atlanta area and, you know, what it takes if you want to get in this industry and what it's going to take if you want to really start investing and building generational wealth through real estate.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. So I was saying off camera, like, you know, we're from New York and starting out like in business for me, like years ago, I used to go to like these networking events and stuff like that. And everybody there was a realtor. Like it was like so many realtors. And I realized that the reason why there's so many realtors is because it's like a commission based job. Mm-hmm. And so but it's a high turnover.
Right.
But if you are successful, like you can make a bunch of money. So it's like $1 million listings and stuff like that. And especially like, you know, those high end markets, New York, LA, now Atlanta. So how did what made you get into the game? Like what made you want to be a realtor?
I stumbled across a group of ladies. So let me rewind. When I moved to Atlanta, I moved by myself, 06. And I was
North Carolina.
Yeah, from North Carolina. Like, originally from North Carolina.
Get them some love. We're gonna get them some love.
I came here by myself.
Shout out to the Ville. Shout out to the Ville.
North Carolina.
Shout out to the Ville.
And I was working this little marketing firm. You know, they call it a marketing job, but you really a telemarketer. You in a little cubicle, and I'm like, all right, you know, I'm not really feeling this. So I went to this like little bar, little club, and I saw all these fly chicks, like all bossed up. Like I'm like, what y'all do? You know, I need to know. And they were like, we are realtors. We do real estate. And at the time, the girl I met, she actually was a part of like a small boutique, all lady, all female real estate firm. So I got my real estate license and I joined them. It's been up since then.
You got the real estate license in North Carolina?
No, I got my real estate license here in 2007.
Okay. So,
So how does that transition into, we're going to talk about like owning the business, but like at what point do you say, okay, it's cool, but I want to actually be on the other side and own my own firm?
What happens is this, when you are selling real estate and you're out here and you hustling and bustling, because if you are really going to make some money out here, you're going to have to work for it. And it's not like you're going to sit behind a desk either. Like you get up in the morning and you behind the wheel. You know, you go where your clients go and you got to really hustle. So at some point you have to decide what you want to do. What type of quality of life do you want? You can take that knowledge and you can train a group of people to perform like you. And they become, you know, like your passive income.
Yeah.
That's why you want to have a team. You know, you want to create your own. And then on top of that, you can make sure that your people are getting serviced the way that you would service them. Because there's, like you said, it's everybody an agent, but everybody's not a performing agent, you know?
There's a big difference. Is there a difference between being a realtor and a real estate agent?
It's a difference. So when you're a real estate agent, you just got your real estate license. You're using the regular forms, you know, you don't have a code of ethics, you're not part of a board.
Okay.
When you're a realtor, you're part of a board of realtors. So the good thing about that is we have special training. We also have different contracts that we use that protect the best interests of our clients and us.
Okay.
So you really want to work with someone that's a realtor because they're held to a different standard. They have a code of ethics. But on top of that, just to add, we have training that we're a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And we're involved in the community and the growth of our communities.
So let me ask you a question, because I heard somebody in the life insurance business say one time, and they was like, life insurance agents, it's the hardest business to make $50,000. It's the easiest business to make $500,000. Meaning, like, if you get a niche market and you can really do a couple policies and make a lot of money, or you can be chasing people down for $100 and work 20 hours a day and make $30,000 a year. And I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, being a realtor is kind of similar. Like, you either hit it big or struggling. So
you up all night. You up all night with it.
Let me tell you, that's the truth. That's the truth. That's why I'm saying that it's going to be 20% of the agents do 80% of the business. Because you can, it's easy, the barrier to entry to get your real estate license is so low. All you need is a high school diploma and no felonies. Pass the test. Test is a week. Take the class for a week, pass the test, boom, you have a real estate license.
Is that true in every state?
Every state, pretty much. Everything is the same. You don't have to have a college degree to be a realtor. You just have to have a GED and no felonies.
So how do you separate yourself? All right, being that it's so competitive, there's so many people and it's a low bar entry. How do you separate yourself? How did you separate yourself as opposed to everybody else that maybe not be successful?
By being myself, but also I'm pretty smart, you know? I know my stuff, and that is my biggest selling point. A lot of people work with me because you're working with someone that knows what they're talking about, but I'm also relatable. You know, back in the day, they had the black suit, everybody buttoned up. You know, you got the black, the tie, you got the hair and the bun in the back. We're not doing that anymore. I started to really use social media as a way to highlight I'm human, but I know what I'm talking about, and I'm relatable. People love to work with people that they can relate to. And I've been able to grow my business by being knowledgeable and also relatable.
Was there a specific deal or client that you had that made the shift for you? Like, you know what, I got this deal and now it's brought me in so many more. Was there a specific moment?
Oh, absolutely. There was one person. So when I got back, so I had my real estate license, started managing multifamily communities when the market crashed, and I got back into real estate full time in 2015. So when I was coming back, my cousin had her coworker, and she was like, she wanted to buy a house. I'm like, all right, let me work with her. Four houses later, two investment properties later, plus I'm about to go help her sell a piece of land, and she's referred me to like six people. She was like a supervisor, like this big company. So that just changed the game for me, because you got to keep in mind, when I came back, I was just like, I'm posting, I'm talking, but I ain't selling nothing, you know? And she gave me an opportunity, and it's just been uphill from there, and it changed my perspective about building long-term relationships. Because sometimes I look at being in this business, and I used to be so much like, we did the business, that's it, let me move on. Now I'm like, hey, what you doing? Let's go to lunch. Like, on some GP, not trying to sell you nothing, not trying to list nothing. We don't even talk about real estate. I'm talking about life. We rode our bikes through, like, Grant Park, like, we just doing things. And I figured, I understand that it's about building the relationship with people. When they like you and they feel like you're just not there to take,
you keep going. Is that part of the success too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You're creating an experience. It's not just selling, we're creating experience.
I create an experience. Right. You know, I have, but the good thing is, because I get a lot of my clients from social, I really like my clients. Like, they people I can hang out with. We can go have drinks, we can hang out. Yeah. Like, we really cool. And so it helps me so much. I want to keep up with them, you know?
Dope. Let me ask you this. Referrals. You have a referral system?
I don't have a system in place. It's to the point where I post a video on social, like, not to brag, but I could get on here and talk a little bit about real estate. I get 15 leads next day, DMs.
So social media is like your driving
force. And then on top of that, people refer me that just follow me. So they follow me. I got a girl, she was in Chicago. She referred me to her brother. Never worked with me, but she's like, I follow you. You got to work with her. He bought his house with me.
Do you network with like other like mortgage brokers or other professionals that might give you leads or?
Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, this is my thing. If we're going to do business together, you got to give me some leads. You're going to have to be a sponsor. You're going to have to be a part of whatever I got going on. The biggest part of it is working with other like mortgage brokers. Like, one thing I can say, there are certain people like that actually can't, that got a big enough audience that can give you some leads. You know, can I shout somebody out?
Yeah, feel free. I mean, feel free. Why not? You know, okay, you know anybody like that?
Matt. I ain't gonna front. Matt, the mortgage guy.
Shout out to our brother MG.
Yes, he definitely has given some leads because he has a big platform. Unfortunately, a lot of lenders that I know, they still in the old ages. They don't really have that. They don't have them that leads to give. They want to just take. And I don't like that. You ain't working with me if you're not giving me something.
Nah, I learned that early on in business. Is like, you got to develop a team.
Right.
So it's like, if you are in business and your clients need a lawyer or your clients need an accountant, you should develop a relationship with the accountant and the lawyer, because it could work vice versa. Because like, the more business that you give them, now they're in a position where it's time for them to refer business to you.
Exactly.
And it's the same. It's almost every industry, there's somebody who you can network with.
Absolutely. There's always more to network with. I have found accountants. I work with lenders, appraisers. You want to be a one-stop shop. because your clients are going to call you and they want your opinion. When it comes to home inspectors, all of these people, you network with them, you build a relationship. And so it's like, if you on my list, you know, because I got a list of people, then you know.
You've made it.
Oh, you made it.
So I'm sure you get a lot, like you said, you get a lot of leads. How do you sort out the serious ones from, like, these people are not serious about actually acquiring real estate?
Well, you know, at some point you can't be the first point of contact anyway. You're running a business. When you go to the doctor's office, you see the person at the front desk, then you see the nurse, then you see the doctor. All right.
You got the vetting system.
You got to get through my selling assistant. You got to get through one more conversation, then you get to me. By the time you get to me, you've been vetted enough and I know what you need. But I got a lot of emails, I already think templates. I got everything, any question you ask, we got it for you.
Perfect.
No, I'm glad you said that because I learned that early on in business. No, I did.
That's what
you
said.
Can't be.
No.
Have you ever seen that meme when it's like 16 heads, you like the admin, you the person showing the house, you the person picking up the phone? That's, you can't do all
that. Yeah, because it's like, because somebody, one time somebody told me I was like eager to make a sale. And they told me, they was like, you got to respect your time. And you can't let people know that you're this eager. Because it was like, if you want to go to the dentist, you can't call the dentist's cell phone.
Right.
You call a dentist. They have office hours.
Yep.
They'll say, okay, this is what time we can fit you in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people, a lot of times in any form of sales, right? And this is why I tell people all the time in sales, in my opinion, if you are doing a service, your clients need you more than you need your clients.
Exactly.
It's important to understand that, because once you fully understand that, it changes your mindset, because now you're not chasing and running after people. And it's like, it changes how somebody looks at you.
Yeah. I just think, like, that's the power of social media, right? It's like, I follow you, so now I feel like I have direct contact with you. So, like, weeding that out is important.
But you also have a way, like, they feel like they have direct contact with me, but they already know. The moment, everything is on my calendar.
Yeah.
Like, you call me, you contact me, all right, my assistant's about to follow up with you and figure out what your needs and wants are, and then she'll put you on the calendar. You trying to move in a year, you don't need to talk to me tomorrow. You know, you trying to sell your house today, I might have an opening at 12:30. You know?
No, I'm glad you said that too, because that's something that people need to learn in business too, is that you have to prioritize.
Absolutely.
You have A clients, B clients, C clients. See, a lot of times, this is why I love Earn Your Leisure, because it's like there's no mentorship. So we don't fully understand business as a community for the most part.
I agree.
And we make a lot of mistakes, but we don't know, like, it's okay to segment people in different categories. Because it's like, once again, if you go to the doctor, if you have a toothache, that's important.
Exactly.
But it's not as important as if you just got shot. Like,
right.
You need more urgent. You need more urgent attention,
exactly.
Right? So they're not gonna treat, they're gonna say, okay, we just gotta wait a minute and we're gonna bring the gunshot victim in first. Like, so it's the same thing with business. Like, you have to be able to prioritize and say, this is more important to my business.
Exactly.
And I can get to this later.
And if you don't do that, what you do is you do a disservice to your client. So the moment that you open the door to be all easily accessible and you don't call somebody back or you don't text them back because you don't have systems in place and you're trying to talk to 15, 20 people a day, you do a disservice because now your customer service is low. Now you're not following through with your systems. You have to set the right expectation for people. They respect that. Like, and people that don't respect my schedule, you're not for me. You're definitely not a client.
No, it's about matching.
Exactly.
And I tell people that all the time. It's like, I might not be a good fit for you. You might not be a good fit for me.
Exactly.
So let's not even, because that takes the whole dynamic of how people look at you as well, right? Because it's like, you're not trying to work with everybody.
No.
It may be a good fit. It may not be a good fit. And then people was like, well, how can I be your client? Now they ask you to be a client. It's like Bernie Madoff. See, we always got to learn from everything. The one thing that Bernie Madoff did that was genius is that he positioned himself where people were, like, if you watch this movie, I think his minimum was like, for a fund was like $10 million. Mm-hmm. And the guy came to him like, I have $5 million. He needed the money. Bernie needed the money. He's like, I have $5 million. He was like, I can't help you. It's only 10. So the guy comes back like, can we do 7.5? He's like, I can fit you in.
Exactly.
That's a fact. Like, you know what I'm saying? But the psychology on it is like, if he would have said, I can, yeah, let me give me your five, the guy gonna look at him like, The fact he acting like he don't need the money. Even if he needed it, he still acting like he don't need it.
See, one of my favorite quote is, you always be hungry, never thirsty. You know, you can't be out here being thirsty for any opportunity, because you put yourself in a situation where people want to run over you because they think that they need, you know what I'm saying, that you need them.
In business and in life.
You're vulnerable. You're vulnerable.
And I feel like being exclusive and putting yourself in a position like, listen, I got a Monday and I got a Wednesday. It's 1 at 2, 1 at 11. If they want to work with you that bad, they're going to go.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not jumping to another. If you got a certain doctor you want to go to and you know this doctor right here going to do everything right, you're not going to say, oh, you're not available on Monday. Fine, I'm going to go to someone else. If you want that person, you're going to wait a month, a week. You know, that's life. And I think people have to start respecting entrepreneurs the same way they respect other industries. And in our industries, especially the realtors, they feel like they can just take advantage of your time. Because they think that you have all this time, and if that means that they're running your business, you're not running your business, and you're not going to be able to grow that way.
You said that you obviously have systems in place now. I'm wondering, at the start, is this something that you had to learn by making mistakes?
Yes, I made a lot of mistakes in the beginning,
when what did it look like prior to, like, I have to make some changes before?
In the beginning, you talking, I'm up 7 a.m., hitting the ground running. I'm showing houses by 8:30, as soon as the lockbox is open. I'm taking calls in the car. I'm pulling over to the side of the road. Like, I'm eating lunch, doing phone consultations, 3 or 4 phone consultations. Then I'm going off to go show 3 more houses to another client. Then I'm at a Starbucks writing a contract. By the time I get home, it's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And I still got 10 things to do because I don't have anybody. I'm the person. I'm the business.
Yeah.
And once I got, I was like, okay, this ain't working. And one person, I was supposed to meet her. Like, I'm going, we had an in-person meeting. It was on the calendar and everything. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I missed it. I just missed the whole appointment. She at the office waiting for me. I'm somewhere across town showing houses. And that, she did not work with me. She definitely decided to work with somebody else. But that was a learning experience for me. I need to take a step back and slow down and get me some systems in place. Because now I'm ruining my reputation.
Right.
And that right there will ruin your business.
Yeah, not even intentionally you're doing it. It's
not intentional. Yeah.
One thing I learned from sports is that you got to slow down. Like all the great ones, they slow down. Like, I remember my coach, I used to play basketball, and my coach used to tell me, he was like, you moving too fast. Mm-hmm. You can't see the game. Like, you just running. He's like, when you slow down, and it's when you think about it, it doesn't really make sense until you actually are in it. Because it's like, most of the time you're thinking, I'm going to go full speed. That's how I'm going to be successful. But the slower you go, the more time you can actually have to evaluate things, look at things. Yeah. And that's true in business as well. It's like, a lot of times entrepreneurs, this goes back to having help and having systems in place.
Of course.
You try to do everything yourself. You're running too fast.
Yeah.
And it's only so fast you're going to run. You're going to just burn out.
Exactly.
You slow down. You get help. Now you can see your vision improves, and now you can actually scale at a much larger pace than if you're just trying to just go full speed ahead.
Viewpoint changes, perspective changes, you get to see a lot clearly, man, that's true.
And that comes a lot with just learning. You know, we have to learn how to be entrepreneurs. A lot of us don't know. And I came across this one realtor, he was dope. He got into the business, he just literally switched from working like a corporate position, got a small loan from the bank, and he literally just started hiring a team. He didn't have one sale. He hired a team, hired an assistant. He did all of that immediately before he had one sale. And his business is running like a well-oiled machine. But then I look at other races, or sometimes us, we just jump out here, get going, and I'm like, oh, I need help. Then we hire one person. Oh, you think the person's supposed to read your mind? Hold up. Oh, I got to write down my systems. And I think that if we learn from the beginning, because the best time to really write down what your plan is from the beginning, not when you're in it, because you will have to take a step back and you're going to miss some money.
It's like franchises. We did an episode on franchises, and it's like, you don't open a McDonald's just winging it. McDonald's has a book that's 600 pages. Everything from how you fold the napkins is already, all you got to do is just read the book and follow it.
Exactly.
The system is in place. And like you say, a lot of times we don't have systems. So your business is never going to be successful if you don't have a system. You're just winging it.
Exactly. You're winging it, and you won't scale, and you will burn out because you're one person.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Troy?
No, I was going to say, I'm thinking at that time, right, you got your license in 07. Let's go back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then 2015, things changed. What was your mindset in those in-between years, right? Like when it was like the market had crashed, what was the mindset then?
I kept my license, you know, so I was still doing a deal here and there part-time, but my mindset was, let me get myself ready, and this time I'm not gonna think that nothing will never happen, and I'm gonna go hard. When I first got my license, I wanted to be like the people I saw, but I know mentally I wasn't really ready because there are people that actually made it through the market shift and they just did what they needed to do and didn't have to go get a 9-to-5. Yeah. But mentally, I wasn't prepared for that. I wasn't prepared to basically kill what I eat. And so I had, so during the time that I was working in multifamily, I got so many gems because I seen a lot. Yeah. I seen how they were taking advantage of people. I understood, like, because in my position, my job, like, people think a property manager job is just, oh, you just in the office. Our job is to bring in revenue. Our job is to rig that refrigerator so we can get our bonuses, and you are sitting there what we know is a jacked up refrigerator.
Yeah.
That's our job. And we have in the property management position, that's the bottom line. So I learned so much in that being there.
You were still in the game. Discipline.
I was still in the game.
Yeah, still in the game, just in a different position.
Just a different position.
And watching it.
Exactly. And so it just geared me up. I was like, I need to run my business like a business.
Yeah.
And I treat people how I want to be treated.
Yeah.
And really focus on building this generational wealth. There's so many people that I used to manage that could buy a house. They just mentally didn't understand that they could do it. Mm. Got the credit score because I'm looking at your credit. I see your pay stubs. But you rather stay here and continuously get this 7% rent increase. And I was doing 7% because I needed my bonus.
7%.
That's pretty high.
That's pretty high.
7% annual?
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty high.
But they would go for it because I'd throw them in. Like, I'll say, okay, we'll give you one new refrigerator. The refrigerator costs $4.98, black refrigerator. I order wholesale for my, but the thing about it is they're like, all right, cool, I'm gonna stay. They sign off on the lease renewal. I'm getting my quarterly bonuses. Life is good. But the thing about it, eventually you're like, this ain't right.
Yeah.
You know?
Does it have an ice maker?
Nah. I'm talking about plain. All right, plain.
Damn,
plain Jane.
Yeah, plain Jane with it.
Plain Jane refrigerator. No special
topics.
No
at all.
Specialty. So, I'm really back here to help people, like, you know, do better, do better, and let's really build something.
Yeah, that shows
with real estate.
That shows a lot of character in your part, right? Like, yeah, the perseverance of it. Like, yo, you saw a downfall, but you said, let me stay in the game, man. That says a lot.
You got to stay down until you come up. I say all the time, it's wins and losses in this game, but you got to be able to keep your composure. And that's another thing that in business is like, you got to keep your composure. You can never get too high, never get too low.
Oh, yeah.
And the market crash 2008, a lot of people were not able to keep their composure, whether they were in stocks or real estate or just, and you know, it's unfortunate, but you were living proof that you made it through that and now you're thriving. So we covered the business, but I wanna give the people the gems on real estate. So in the next segment, we're gonna talk about real estate and different ways how people can improve their property listings and tips for agents and things of that nature.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
All right, so in this segment, I want to give some tips to people. So you're a realtor. So the first thing is, like, when you're showing people properties and things of that nature, right, we always hear about, like, good neighborhoods, bad neighborhoods. Like, what makes a neighborhood, quote-unquote, a good neighborhood, like, for people that's looking to buy a home? They always say the school system, but, like, what else?
Well, I'm looking at the numbers. So I'm a numbers person. So if you're interested in a certain area, I'm going to run the market stats. I'm looking into Curbed Atlanta. I'm looking at the developments that take place. So I have like a little spreadsheet. I start developing on zip codes and keeping up. So if the appreciation values are going up year over year, that's a good thing. If they're going down year over year, that's something I want to talk to you about. So that doesn't make a great neighborhood if the appreciation values are on the negative and not in the positive. So people start focusing on the schools when you need to be looking at the values, or the values going up or down. That's number one. That what makes a great neighborhood. I feel like the second part what makes a great neighborhood is what's important to the client. There are some people that they want to be in a live work space. They want to have some place that they can walk outside and happy hour and all of that. Then we need to find out if that's a good neighborhood for you. And then you have other people, I want to walk nature trails, you know, I want to be in those types of areas. So it's not general, it's client specific, but generally speaking, everybody should be worried about appreciation values and school systems, because both of those go hand in hand when it's time for you to sell your property, because every property is a profit. Mm-hmm. That you should look at your house as a bank. You're trying to make money when you sell this house.
So you say Curb Atlanta?
Curbed Atlanta.
What's that?
And so it's a online magazine that you can use to look at different developments in different neighborhoods and what's up and coming. So I was just looking up a project for in College Park. My clients are looking to get a property in College Park, and they have this big $6.5 billion project that's coming down there where they're making a mixed-use space down in that area. And the reason for that even though it's part of Fulton County, that area has been economically challenged for so long. Now they're going to bring in, because the average median income that a person was making down here is like $29,000 a year, but the regular people up here in Atlanta on the north side of Fulton County is $65,000. Mm. So they have an initiative to make that better, and they're calling it Airport City because it's literally by the airport.
I just saw that y'all got a G League team coming to California.
Oh yeah, exactly. So I keep up with what's going on in our city. That's, and I can tell you that if you were looking to invest, maybe you want to look over here, because now the prices are low, but they won't stay low when the project comes up.
Did that website also shows the appreciation values?
No, that's on the back end. That's okay. You got to do some work for that. That's the agent thing. You know, okay. You're going to have to log into your MLS, mm-hmm. and you're going to have to run some stats.
Okay.
You got to run some
reports. Regular person can't not public wouldn't knowledge. Be able to see that?
No.
Gotcha.
Is there any way a regular person could see if appreciation values are going
you
up?
You can see something, because you know what? A lot of our stats now, even though they're a little skewed, I hate Zillow. Let me say that. I hate Zillow.
Nah,
I don't want
Zillow
you to
told
use
me
that.
My house is worth $800,000.
Right. The owner of Zillow, you know, he even sold his house for less than the house his own house was worth. But you can use sites like that to get a general idea of what's going on in the market, mm-hmm. because if you scroll down, it'll talk about values and recent solds. So that'll give you help if you don't like necessarily want to jump out the window with a realtor. You can at least see what's going on there.
So when you're showing a house, right, staging a house, what's that process like? Are you or your company putting the items, the furniture, the decor into the house? Like, how's that work?
Well, okay. I have what's called a friendly little staging. So I have like a couple of items I keep in the storage room. Mm-hmm. If you ain't really got the budget, or if we just need a few things like a pillow or something like that, a plant,
yeah.
You know, I go over there, I put that in, you know, it's nothing. Cause when the house sells, it makes it better. Other than that, if it's like a full staging project, it depends. We have so many ways we can do. We got virtual staging, got a company you can just basically virtually stage the whole house. I mean, in person it's gonna be empty, but those pictures, you're gonna show up, you know? Then you also have companies that you can hire to come in and stage the properties for you, yeah. Which is what I do for people that's like, listen, you need to stage this property to sell it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as far as like school system, cause that's a big one. How do you know, like it was like the school's like 4-star, it's like ratings. Like what's,
oh, yeah.
What? Like, what do you look at, like, to see if
so
a school's
you go to, you can see it everywhere, but I like to go to greatschools.org.
Greatschools.org.
Yeah. So that good website site. Is good dope. Site. I like the site because it tells you a lot about the neighborhood in the area because, you know, due to fair housing, we can't say certain things to our clients. But when you go to greatschools.org, not only does it tell you the star of the school, mm-hmm. but it also tells you the demographics of the students, and it tells you each category. So science, they're growing. They're low in math, so yeah. It's categorized. So if you're looking at demographics of the students, then you know demographics of the parents.
Yeah, and then parents can write reviews and everything
exactly.
about the school district.
They write reviews about the school, so it helps. I tell people to use greatschools.org to find out about the
Once
school.
Once upon a time, there was a review written about me. Yeah, once upon a time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You were a teacher?
I am.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know about that stuff.
I do. Good All right. Yeah, good site.
Yeah. Hey, he's definitely a teacher.
In more ways than one.
So how important is comps? That's like the most important thing?
Absolutely. You gotta have comps, and you have to search for comps. So I'm so obsessed with comps. I took an appraisal class at the beginning of this year. Oh, maybe it was the end of last year. I don't know. Everything's running together. But I really wanted to know, like, how are these appraisals coming up with these numbers? Because they're disputing me. If I'm on the selling side, yeah. It's like, wait a minute. I know this house is worth this. Like, how are you guys coming up with this? So comps are important because appraisals have to happen for people to get the houses financed. And if it comes in below value, it's an issue.
I had a very, very unfortunate situation when it came to appraisals. I didn't even know there was a class. So where can somebody take the class? And are you noticing there's more people that look like us taking these classes? Because that is the part of the home buying process that can make or break things.
The class I was in, it was just me and one, it was three of us okay. in there. It was only three of us. It was 8:00 in the morning. You had to drive like an hour and a half outside the city to get there. It was only three of us there. But I took the class, and there's a few things I learned about these appraisals. Mm-hmm. First of all, they can get their license the same way a realtor get their license. It's low barriers to entry. They're human too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you got to walk them, you know, if they're not really an experienced appraiser,
yeah.
I learned from my listings, go ahead and put my comps on the kitchen table. I'm trying to meet them at the house. I'm trying to explain to them at the moment how I came up with my comps and why they should use mine. Because
okay.
by the time they write it on the report, even though you can dispute it, they never get
changed. I know.
Yeah, because that's important. Because what he's referring to is, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but the Bookings Agency Institute, did a report last year, and they said that black homes were undervalued by $156 billion. Did you know about that?
Yeah.
So, and we did a whole thing on the podcast about it. And Troy actually, it happened to Troy. His house got devalued by like $60,000.
It happens a lot.
$100,000.
Compared to his neighbors with like same type of houses.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's called redlining. You know, let's not act like it doesn't happen. I'm honestly speaking, I tell my clients to take all those personal pictures out the house. You don't know. My clients are ambiguous when you walk in there. You don't know who owns this house, mm-hmm. what they look like. I do it on purpose. I tell them take them out. Like, don't even hide them in the closet. Take them out the house. Put them in somebody else's house. Put them in your trunk. You don't, because people are, it's a dirty game.
Even if it's subtle.
If it's subtle.
It's like they could still have a hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a objective. Yeah. It's a hidden objective.
But if there's more people on the side of, you know, the people who are actually from our communities actually doing these appraisals, then we may have a fair chance.
Because we know what to fight for, right. You know, and we know what makes sense. You could successfully fight an appraisal. It may delay your closing, but if you have the comps and you can run down the numbers and you can show, you can fight an appraisal. You just need someone to do it for you. Okay. You need to have them look at those.
So how do you fight? How do you fight the appraisal?
The number one thing is you're going to have, like, I've done a few appraisal fights. Mm-hmm. One, you need to make sure that you're comparing apples to oranges. So you got to break down the comps when it comes to the upgrades in the house. That stuff counts. Mm-hmm. Looking at the square footage, that counts. And sometimes they'll leave off a good chunk of your square footage. So maybe you want to hire your own company to come in and measure the square footage of your house. That's the number one mistake that people actually look over. I had one house, they was missing a whole 900 square feet. Of course
that's exactly what happened. They said that, and Chad, he knows for sure, like the lower level of my house, they didn't count.
Exactly, they do that often.
At all, like, and we have like a gym down there, a whole another like almost apartment. Yeah, window, bathroom.
Now,
like,
you know how you, as long as you got a window, door, extra door, it's counted as a finished space. See, they're still counting it as an unfinished space because the tax records had it as unfinished probably before you finished out that bottom.
Yeah.
And so this, a lot of times, like I said, you got to fight that. Like, no, this is my square footage. This is how I had a company come out and measure.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pass this up. So you can dispute that.
Thank you, Cam.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
and can you like complain about an appraiser? Like, is there like a complaint
board? Absolutely, because they all appraisers work for a company. So when you look at the very bottom where they sign off, there's a company name there. Get in touch with the person that's in charge.
Yeah, I still have his name written down.
Yeah, you can't just go by the person that comes out and appraise. Like, they're working for a major company, mm-hmm. but the company that they work for, then you need to send them your grievances and your evidence and go from there.
It happened to D.L. Hughley.
I saw that.
That was crazy. And it was like he got his house to pray, and it was so low that the bank actually called him and thought that he had like damage done to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And so it was just such an egregious situation, and obviously he's famous, so that helped probably too. The bank actually reversed it,
of course.
And they apologized, but he was like it was so low compared to his neighbors, they thought it was like damaged.
Mm-mm. But that it still happens, and that's why I think that we have to be very careful when you're working with people, and you know your stuff. If you're a homeowner, you need to know. You need to have documentation of upgrades you've done in your house. Keep up with that. You need to have documentation of your square footage. Anything that you've done in your property, you need to keep up with that and keep it. We're so lackadaisical until we need it. Mm. Then when you're in a position where you want to sell and you come in undervalued, you can't even find the documents to prove it. One time I fought a low appraisal by actually having every single receipt that my client used to upgrade their kitchen. Mm-hmm. I put all that in a big package. I wrote it out. I wrote out what this would be, how these comparing properties. So with these upgraded kitchens, and we got the house up $10,000, and they were trying to bring us down. Like, we still didn't hit the number I wanted, but we still got $10,000 back credit. So you can fight this stuff. You just got to know.
So what makes a house more desirable? Because they always say, like, the kitchen – it's like something that's like a big item. Like, what, you as a realtor, what would you suggest people that are looking to sell their home or even buy a home? Like, what's the desirable things that people can do to add value to their homes?
Well, I think general maintenance. I find a lot of times when people are ready to sell their house, they got in the house ain't been pressure washed since 06. You know, it need pressure washing. You can tell it's deferred maintenance on the property. So you need to get that stuff done if you want to sell for top dollar. Yeah. If you have a kitchen, and we know how those kitchens look back in the day, but it was the walnut color cabinet, and you walked in the house, it was like burgundy walls, and the other room was yellow.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you to get agreeable gray hair ASAP.
If you sound like, my old grandmother.
Yeah,
if your fridge is white,
if your refrigerator is still white, but your stove is black because you replaced the stove when it broke, but your refrigerator is still kicking, these certain things you're going to need to do. So you need to be prepared to just have general maintenance, unless you're trying to sell it below value. If you want to sell for top dollar, you need to present a product like that. The kitchen counts. The general maintenance of the property is what is really important to a lot of people.
Yeah, one thing that they looked at and they took into account was the roof. Roof is important too.
Oh yeah, roof is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a homeowner, you need to be calling your home. You need to call your little insurance company anyway. Yeah. Was there some hail here? You better watch the news.
So, but it's kind of tricky because it's like if you're trying to sell a home, at what point do you do too much renovation and it's like not really worth it?
Oh, that's when you start looking at the comp. So I tell people all the time, there is a certain cat in your neighborhood. So don't go putting marble floors in a $200,000 house. You're not going to get your money back.
Right.
You know, you have to be very careful about that. So when you're looking at comps, look at the photos of what recently sold too. Yeah. Look at, and then get a good idea of your area and your demographic. If you got a $500,000 house, don't use that sticker backsplash that you can get from Home Depot. I'm going to need you to get some real tile back there. But if you're selling a $160,000 house, you can throw the sticker up there. Yeah. You got to know.
We spoke about that on the episode with Matt when we were talking about 50 Cent. He put this multi-million dollar home renovations in it in a neighborhood that the average house is like $300,000.
It makes no sense. It's never going
to happen. Elephant.
Yeah, white elephant.
It's a white elephant. And you're never going to, first of all, an appraiser ain't going to be able, they're not going to be able to comp that. Like, what? Why would you, like, no. You got to stay in line with the neighborhood.
So you want to stay in line?
You want to stay in line. You could do a little something extra, but don't expect to get your money out of it if you take it too far.
Don't go. That's important for people to know. Because a lot of times people want to just do crazy things and put the jacuzzi in with the grotto.
You do that. You do that if you want that. But
got the movie theater.
You got a whole movie theater. Yeah. It might have cost you all this money, but you ain't getting it back.
Strobe lights and everything.
Heated pool.
Shout out to 50, man.
It's sold.
Yeah. So when somebody's selling a house, what are some of the fees, right? I think people don't really understand that. What are some of the fees that come along with selling a house?
When you're selling your property, you're paying to sell your property. So there's a lot of fees that can come along with that. So you have the, of course, general maintenance, getting the house ready to go on market. Mm-hmm. But you pay the agent. You pay us. Who you think pay us? The buyers? Oh no. You pay the buyer's agent and the selling agent. So you have those expenses, and then the only other expense that you have is like your prorated taxes. And if you have a homeowners association, you're gonna have to get the clear HOA letter. So your fees are minimal.
Yeah.
But the biggest fee you pay is your realtor.
What about, is that the closing costs as well? Because I see it's like tricky. Sometimes a buyer has it, sometimes the seller does it.
Well,
how does that work?
Well, this is the thing. The buyer can negotiate closing costs. Mm-hmm. You look at the market, you look at the area. You need to, when you're pricing the property, you need to look at also, I personally look at what's been going on in the area, the recent sales, and on average, what are the sellers contributing? Because my biggest thing is I don't want you to set the expectation that nobody's contributing anything, and you don't have to, when the whole area, everybody's in, contribute $10,000 on the average. Okay. They don't have to contribute.
Yeah.
If you're getting like an FHA loan, they can contribute up to 6%. They can do 3% on a conventional loan, but they don't have to contribute anything because that's their profit.
Mm.
So if you get enough demand for the property, which is, you know, my thing is getting multiple offers, creating a bidding war, and like, hey, somebody not going to need the money, or you need $1,000, boom. I'm taking that offer before I take somebody to need $10,000.
Okay.
How do you negotiate, like, okay, you can negotiate closing costs, but like, what's the lower you, the lowest you can go on that?
Zero. I have sold houses where my sellers have contributed no dollars to the closing costs. Find your own money.
Really?
Yes. Mm. I tell buyers that all the time. Like, you're not entitled to the profit from the seller. The seller has their own expenses. They're paying these realtors' fees, sometimes 7% realtor fees that they have to pay just to even get their property sold. They don't necessarily have to, and depends on the area, the demand that you create by staging the property, getting the property prepared for marketing, pricing it correctly, and having an agent like me, you know, there, you may not have to, you may
so,
not have to pay.
So has anybody tried to negotiate, do you negotiate your fees?
No.
Non-negotiable. Not playing that game.
Let me tell you something. I tell people. That's the number, y'all.
That is the number.
My favorite line is, if you want me to negotiate my fees, can I negotiate my service? Mm. As long as I can negotiate my service, we can do this.
I like that.
So that's the seller's fees. Now, the commission's fee, is there a standard commission fee for realtors?
Yeah, it's subjective, 7%, 6%, 7%.
Okay.
And so that's about the fee of it, the total price of the property times 7%.
Yeah, okay. Because that's like these $1 million listings. Like that. You ever watch that show?
Pay? Oh, police. Yeah, I watch that show.
That's because, yeah, I think that's like what people really like are attracted.
That's what you want. Yes, that's what you want. Because, I mean, then you still split the money. You know, you got the selling side and the buyer side to wait for you to really come in. So you I list the property.
Yeah.
So I get my 6% commission if I bring a buyer and I'm representing the seller. Because in our state, we can do dual agency.
I was going to ask you
represent
that.
Represent both. Yeah. But if you bring the buyer, then I got to give you half of that. So I get my three, you get three.
Okay.
So it's not a conflict of interest to represent both?
Depends. It can be a conflict of interest. One person becomes a client, the other person is a customer. It's the only way you're able to do it. You have to walk a fine line because generally speaking, then you're just there as to consult and write paperwork. You really can't negotiate for either party. I've done a couple of dual agencies with like investors or people that really know what they want. It's real hard to do dual agency with a first-time buyer. I'm going to tell you that now. As a matter of fact, if I get a first-time buyer, I'd rather refer them to a person with my team before I try to negotiate because I'm fighting hard for my seller to keep their money. You're a buyer. You fighting hard to get money. How are we going to make this work?
Hmm.
You know, especially a first-time buyer. Now, an investor, they're different. They know what they want. They're good, you know. Yeah.
So you
deal with luxury homes, right?
Yeah.
And over the course of maybe a couple of years, you've seen the median home go from $275,000, you said?
Yes.
To now $325,000 in Atlanta?
Yes.
What are some of the factors that have led to that, and what have you noticed with the buyers? What demographic is doing the buying?
Well, predominantly my clients are all African-American.
Okay.
So it's us. We are making some moves here, and what's the driving force is Atlanta is growing. Now, people can say what they want about Mayor Kasim Reed and when he tore down all them churches and built that up, built the dome, tore down them historical churches. But at the end of the day, when he made that move and they built the Mercedes-Benz Dome and they mm-hmm. kind of created State Farm Arena and they redid that,
yeah.
It created more opportunity for us. Now we have more opportunities. We have soccer games here. We have so much that's going
champions.
On. Champions.
Champions.
So, all these things. So we start with sports and then we just, now let's go out. Now you got people like Tyler Perry telling people to come down here and build their own tables in Atlanta. You have The Rock that just bought a $9 million house here. You got Cardi B that just bought her house here.
Yeah.
What is happening here is people are seeing that there is wealth here. And the good thing is that's the driving front. That's how prices go up. We're creating our own black Mecca.
Yeah.
We're becoming the black Hollywood that they said we were going to be. When I first moved here, they was talking about the Beltline. When I first moved here, they were saying that we're going to be the next black Hollywood. I see it actually happening now. And that was from 06.
Speaking of Atlanta, speaking of the Beltline, and I saw a little baby on the Breakfast Club talking about, I guess he's from the west side of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And he was saying that his neighborhood, the prices is going up because
of
the Beltline. Can you talk about that?
You say he's a big client of yours?
No. It's a big project.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the Beltline is just basically a Beltline connecting the entire city of Atlanta. People only think about the Beltline being at the bottom, but it actually goes all the way around. And so what it does is really to help us, one, with traffic so you can get on and off the trolleys.
Mm-hmm.
But then on top of that, you have, like, parks and all these things that are connected. So we're really trying to build our own communities within a community. So they do yoga in the park. You can now bike the Beltline down in South Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So they're creating these opportunities so we can be more like New York, you know? How y'all got what you guys have. So we're trying to create that. And there's restaurants and there's, like, live workspaces. So you're really trying to create that environment because now everybody is, you know, no longer has the aspiration to get the big house in the suburbs. People now want to be close to the city.
Mm-hmm.
They're sacrificing space for that, and they want to enjoy their lives. That's the millennials. They want it right now. So they want to walk outside right now. They want to go on a trolley and get to where they need to go right now. So that's the big part of the Beltline.
So Atlanta, specifically, since we're in Atlanta, like what's the hot area that, because it's the west side, that's like Mercedes-Benz Stadium is on the west side, right?
Yes.
That's like the hottest area in Atlanta right now for real estate?
It's a lot of hot areas. If I had to choose one, like, that had the most appreciation value, This based on the numbers. Oh, yeah, I was running them the other day. They up 21% is the city of Decatur. Yeah, the city of Decatur is up 21% on appreciation values. The last time I checked on the west side, they're only up, they're up 12%, which is still good. East Atlanta is hot, but they're up 8% because East Atlanta is actually taking a little while longer to get through the process and gentrify than other areas.
Where we in East Atlanta right now, right?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Uh-huh. East Atlanta Center.
30316. So 30316, this area is growing. If I could tell anybody by zip code 30316, 30032, that's the city of Decatur, and then 30318, that's the hot area on the west side.
So these areas are hot. When's the best, is there a best time, a more ideal time to get in into a deal?
I tell people, if you're looking to buy and you want a really good deal, shop in the winter month.
Winter, why?
Yeah. Because if a person is selling their houses around Christmas, they want to sell, they desperate. You get a better deal. I onboarded so many clients around Christmas, that's why I didn't realize what year it was. But they got crazy deals. The builders is throwing money at you because they don't want to start the year in the red. Yeah. So if you're buying a property, buy it in the winter months. By the time you get to spring, two things happen.
That's what I always hear, buy spring.
Parents want to sell and buy in spring because they want to hurry up and do this before they get out of school, do the transition. You have a lot of competition. Everybody's shopping in the spring. Prices are up in the spring. Mm. So from a buyer standpoint, you don't want to be out here when it's like 10, 15 people to one house, multiple offer situations.
No, I love what you say. You forgot what year it was, because that's like when you really start to get money, you lose track of things. I remember one time it was like the weather was freezing in New York, and I noticed every single day how I was checking the weather. And then I don't know what the weather is. Doesn't matter.
Like, you got stuff to do. It don't even matter. I'm telling you, I'm running so hard. I wake up, I just literally look at my calendar, I click the button, and I go.
It really don't.
It doesn't matter. You got stuff to do.
It was different.
It's different. It don't matter. Yo, you got stuff to do.
But when it's slow, you know everything. You know the humidity. You know everything.
Yeah, you feel everything different.
When you're running, you just focus.
Nah,
you
know? So let me ask you this. As far as like being a realtor, right? Like, how do you, because everybody wants the multi-million-dollar listings but how does that work? Like, how do you get assigned to a house? Like, how does that work?
Oh, you don't get assigned to a house, you gotta go get it. Mm. You know, you actually have to network, you gotta talk to people. Talk to somebody that want to buy a house. Talk to someone that wants to sell their house, and you get that appointment.
So, like, an agency, but don't like big agencies have like they would like give or every you just got to get
it's
it.
Open season.
Let me tell you, big agencies, they definitely not just gonna be giving you out leads. Mm-hmm. You know, they get opportunities. They'll give you a couple of referrals. But if you are out here and you're selling and you want to get into these big deals, you build a relationship and you work hard and you keep going. That's how you get those listings. Nobody's dropping it in your lap. No. Hmm. No money dropping in your lap.
That's true. What if somebody has the point of view where they trying to like do everything themselves, right? Because like we had like a couple NFL agents and like a couple NFL guys, they're not hiring agents anymore because they feel like they can negotiate their own contract and save money. What's your opinion if somebody wants to sell their home without a realtor to try to save money for the realtors? Is that a good idea, bad idea?
I see it happen all the time. Okay. And anytime someone is trying to sell their house without a realtor, it's statistically proven that they sell their house for 22% less than they would have made if they had a realtor. And the reason for that is I've noticed, and I have sold a lot of people like for sale by owners, they'll pay for a buyer agent. You're gonna have to pay somebody. They don't, because they don't know the contracts, they don't know, they don't understand the terms. And I had one person, I'm like, I'm not representing you, I'm representing the buyer. If you got questions about this contract, you need to call your agent, or you don't have an agent, call your attorney. Yeah. You know, I'm not doing both jobs.
That brings me to another question. It was like, what are some things that can kill a deal?
Oh, the biggest deal killers I see that happen is repair requests. You get an inspector in there and they make a big deal out of something. Seller doesn't want to fix anything. And buyer is overly emotional and not understanding that these are just normal wear and tear. This is just normal things that happen in a house.
Okay.
That kills the deal quick. And then ego. Like, I don't like my sellers and my buyers. Like, if I'm the median. If I get pushback, like, if I get attitude, I'm representing the seller, and I can tell this agent is being a little funny, you know, a little itchy. <You know? laughs> I'm not sharing that with my client because they're emotional.
Yeah.
I'm not emotional about this. I got a job to do, you know?
A lot of gems, a lot of information. Yeah. So in the last segment, we're going to close it out with some more tips from realtors, and we're going to talk about your business and, your scaling model.
All right.
All right. So we're gonna talk about a few things. But before, I wanted to talk about a serious topic, something that's been in the news. A young lady was actually murdered, I think, in Detroit. She was a realtor. And what's the issue as far as, especially like being a woman, how is that as far as like, are there like rules in place, laws in place, and are there any tips for female realtors that you can recommend?
Oh, definitely. I can tell you for sure. There's tips. There's safety classes. One thing about being a realtor, they have a lot of safety classes that we take. But I'll say this: you need to have systems in place, and you can't jump and just run and meet people and show them houses. I'm not doing that. Like, the first thing I do, shout out to my husband. The first thing I do, he's on my calendar. So I have my calendar on his phone. He knows where I'm at. Everywhere I go, everything I do, it's on my calendar. So he knows where I'm at all the time.
Okay.
Then you take it to the next level, get a buddy system. You know, if you're going to meet a stranger to show a house, everybody's a stranger until they're not, right?
Right.
So the first thing I do is, like, we do phone consultation, but until you get an approval letter, you don't see me. I'm not seeing you without an approval letter, and I don't just take an approval letter. I want you to work with one of my preferred lenders, because by that time, I know they got all these stuff. They got your social, they got your ID, they done ran your information.
Background check.
By the time I get your approval letter, then I want a copy of your ID, and you meet me at my office or a public area, Starbucks, something like that. Then I get a feel for your vibe. You don't just go run see houses with me. You sign an exclusive agreement, and then if I feel comfortable moving forward, I do. I have turned down so many people, because I am a female and I'm on social media, and I have gotten approached by some crazy enough. I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't like the energy.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I feel I don't feel safe around you.
Yeah.
Even though I got this approval letter and you may be spending a good budget.
Yeah.
I don't think you're a good fit for me.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't even think about that. Like, you're actually going to maybe 2 to 3 houses a day with a complete stranger.
Strangers. They strangers till they're not. And
exactly.
And keep in mind, they can tell someone to meet them there.
You
pull up. You trying to show a house, you're just trying to just get in and out, you know. And I always say, when you go into a house, like, I park on the side of the street because I want to be able, if I got to run out, I got to jump in the car and go. I got a gun and a taser, and I mostly keep both. And I keep a fanny pack because I like to have my stuff like in a fanny pack or whatever.
Yeah.
It's easier for you to have your hands free. Don't have these big, like, I like my little designer bags and all that too. I love that, but I'm not wearing that to go show a house.
Okay.
You know, and just be aware of your surroundings. Let them walk in front of you. They know you don't have to walk through the house and say, hey, here's the kitchen. They see that's the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, here's the bathroom. You know, you can kind of do your tour. But if you feel uncomfortable, just don't go to that part of the house. I have actually been on. I had a client. He was a male client. And it was nothing to males, you know. He was a male client. And then he showed up with a male friend that I didn't know he was bringing somebody else with the tour.
Yeah.
I was uncomfortable, but he was already a client. So I opened the door and I stayed downstairs. Like, y'all take the tour upstairs. You let me know what you think. When he came back downstairs without, like, making them feel uncomfortable, I was like, well, they said it was marble floors up there. You know, just kind of built conversation. And you just always kind of moving that way. So I think you got to trust your discernment. And don't tell everybody where you at, especially on social media. Like, hey, I'm at this property here on 22258 8th Street. And you're trying to get more clients, but you also become a target by letting people know your every move. So what I've started to do now with my social media, especially for people that are out here video and all that, video the house, save it, and when you leave that location, post it.
Yeah.
The Tekashi 6ix9ine strategy. Say you're somewhere six hours after you left
exactly.
The
location. But you got to think about
it. Nah. It's a real situation, especially for men. It's things like that we don't even think about. And it's like, as a woman, it's like so many things, like Uber drivers, so many different areas.
Many people coming at us.
Where it's a crazy world that we live in.
Yeah.
And you gotta be safe.
And
so
I read
it's important.
That article, and the first thing I thought about is someone called her to see a house and she showed it. That's exactly what I read. I saw all the other pieces, but so they called you, they wanted to see a house, and you went. The middle part didn't happen.
No systems.
You missed a couple of pieces.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It could have helped save your life.
It's unfortunate.
You know, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So as far as your business, like, what's your scaling model moving forward? What's your plan? You want to, how many agents do you have working for you now?
Actually, I have two agents, two assistants.
Okay.
My scaling model is about, really, I want to have about 50 agents eventually. Mm. And by the time I'm doing that, I'm not showing houses. I'm not selling houses.
Throughout the country?
yeah, throughout the country, everywhere. Okay. You know, I definitely want to get my license in California. Definitely want to get my license in New York and Miami. I want to have my license in those big cities because those cities, of course, the median purchase price and sales price is so high. Mm. The way that we work here in Atlanta, you know, no tea, no shades, people, no other agents. But the truth of the matter is we work hard for it. We work harder and we still get less. Mm-hmm. So we put this same, I put the same type of effort and the average sales price is $1 million per house. It's only up.
Game changer.
Gotta get you. I don't mind taking the time to learn the market.
Gotta get you in New York.
You see what I mean? Yeah. And then educating clients. I get people contact me from other cities all the time. Yeah. So you do that. So that's what I want to scale. I want to scale up, get in other cities, make my mark there, and eventually put myself in a platform where I'm really training agents on how to do this the right way and have a long-time business, not like a short-time stint.
Yeah, so you're educating clients, but you also want to educate agents.
Yeah.
Is there a system in place now that, like, if somebody calls you or, like, a sort of a mentorship piece that you provide now?
Not yet. It's launching, though. So I will be launching my Agent Tools for Success. It's the online site. We're going to do webinars, ebooks, and also coaching calls.
Yeah.
So I'm launching that very soon. Like I'm wrapping up just a few small tweaks in it because I see that there's a need for people to get information. By the time I get 15, if I do a live or do a video or something, and I got 15 emails from agents asking for advice, and I got 2 leads. All right. So you guys you need some information, and you want someone to help you learn. You know this industry.
All right. So what? Are you looking to hire new people? Like, what's that process as far as bringing agents on? Are you open to bringing new agents on now or?
Not right now. Okay. Same way we're talking about systems. Mm-hmm. I got a couple of more systems I want to put in place before I bring on more agents and really writing down my expectations because you don't want to, people can leave when they want to. They take your knowledge and they go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to put people in a position where it's a value for me in them. And when you do come, you need to come with a certain skill set already because you can't teach personality. I can teach you the technical things already, but if you don't have the skills to have personality, if you don't have the drive, I'm not trying to coach you to get out the bed.
Mm.
Nah, I'm not here for that.
Yeah.
I'll coach you to do your job and get better at your craft, understanding how to sell, understanding body language, understanding how to talk to people, how to adapt to certain people. I'm one person, but I'm a different person depending on each client. You bubbly, I'm bubbly. You cool, I'm cool. You know, whatever you need from me, I'm gonna be that. That's how I'm selling. You know,
just keep the same energy.
I'm giving you the energy you give me.
Yeah,
and it relaxes people. Some people don't even know how to do that small, simple skill.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'll coach on. But if you need somebody to motivate you just to get up, don't come over here.
So somebody has extreme drive. Right?
Yeah, you and gotta be extremely.
They're passionate. What if they haven't had experience yet in the game, right? Is that a requirement?
No. Okay. I prefer people with no experience.
Okay.
That way you don't have any bad habits. You're not coming here with no bad habits. You coming with no expectations, no bad habits, and you ready to absorb and you listen. As long as you're driven and you have the basic fundamental skills, you know, speak intelligently, be able to write an intellectual email, and be ready to go to work. I think people think this is too cute, especially for the lady agents. Y'all would think it's just all about the flyness, not about the work.
The flyness is part of it.
You better make time to do that flyness and get to work.
That's one thing I really like when we were talking off camera. You were saying like how you study like market updates and you educate your clients on like different mortgage rates and different mortgage opportunities. It's like you're not just selling them the home.
Right.
You're educating them on, you know, different things.
Because you're more of an advisor. They're relying on you to give them some solid information. And if the only thing you know about an area is the color of the floors and what type of appliances and you don't really know about the area, you don't care about the development of the city, you're in the wrong business. Because you need to care about the development of the city because this is going to help you figure out what's going to happen 10 years from now. Like what I see happening from 10 years from now in Atlanta because I studied this market, we're going to be up. 600,000 plus is going to be the new, that's going to be the new language here. It's happening already. And so I know where people need to go. Anything touching the city, you need to be there. You need to invest there. You need to get a piece of land.
I'm gonna get a place out here in Atlanta.
Noted.
It can be.
Atlanta alumni. This is your
quarter
one.
Of an acre.
Nah,
buy it.
Nah, we love Atlanta. Yeah. We was here yesterday. We was driving. I was telling Troy and Alex. I'm like, we come here so much. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm visiting. I feel like I'm coming home.
Right.
No, I'm like, we're starting to learn the streets.
We know the streets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We were driving down the street. I'm like, yo, we going to Mike's house? We're like, oh, yeah, we here.
You
know where you at. Yeah, I know where Insomnia Cookies are. So.
We got that home feel. You know, it's a different type of feeling when you get
here. Yeah, we love it here. Yeah. We love it here. There's always so much love that's given out. So.
Well, Kiana, thank you for joining us. That was a lot of information. Thank you for rocking with us. We appreciate it. How can the people contact you, like social media and website?
It's easy. My name is Kiana Watson, QUIANAWATSON. I'm Kiana Watson on Instagram. I am Kiana Watson on Facebook. I got KianaWatson.com. I am the brand. So I'm Kiana Watson. Yeah. You know, come check me out.
Troy, some housekeeping items?
Shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. Y'all know that's our Proud to Pay program. We have obviously some tiers on there where you get exclusive content, exclusive merch. And obviously, we're putting out some extra episodes. So be sure to log on to patreon.com/earnyourleisure to join us there. And everybody that's on Earn Your Leisure University, you know that is our online webinar. It's our online school, but we have webinars 3 times a week with myself, Shadi, our boy, MG, the Morris guy. Shout out to our boy, Jamal, who does the Wednesday guest webinars. They are extremely educational and informational. So make sure y'all sign up for that. And everybody that's supporting the merch on earnyourleisure.com. It has been moving really well. So shout out to everybody that's been purchasing. We appreciate it, and we love the support, man.
Yeah, for sure. Make sure you check us in a city near you. By the time you hear this, our Atlanta run will be over. And we had a live podcast, and Kiana was one of our guests, and she did a wonderful, terrific job. So next stop is Houston. You saw it by this time. You already have seen the footage of Atlanta. You know what we H-Town. Did out there. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So H-Town, we're pulling up. Make sure you come out. And, yes, the book tip of this week is The Millionaire Real Estate Agent, recommended by our guest. So if anybody is interested in being a real estate agent, that's probably a book that you should read. And you should also check out your class will probably be up by this time.
Oh, so. Yeah. My class is definitely up. Yeah. So go ahead and go to agenttoolsforsuccess.com, Agent Tools for Success on Instagram, and Agent Tools for Success on Facebook. You see, I am very strategic.
No games.
Agent Tools for Success is definitely going to help you get some gems about running your business.
Systems in place.
Oh, yeah. Systems.
For sure. So once again, thank you, guys. Oh, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube, Apple, Spotify channels. Subscribe, leave a comment.
Please.
Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
All right.